You are listening to the Meet Us in Buellton podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Welcome to the Meet Us in Buellton podcast. I'm your co-host, Mackenzie Felsted.
And I'm your other co-host, Kathy Vreeland.
Great. We are so excited today to have Adam Firestone from Firestone Walker Brewing Company. This year, they're actually celebrating their 25th anniversary. Welcome, Adam. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here. It's a real treat.
Do you want to just go ahead and give us a brief introduction about yourself?
Sure. I'm something of a local here. I was actually born in Monterey County, but have been here since 1970. Here being, I grew up for the most part on a cattle ranch just north of Buellton, just north of the city limits, and disappeared for a few years for school and military service, but came back and have been here ever since. So part of the community.
Well, we're really excited to learn more about your company today. Let's just dive right in with some questions, and we'll have Kathy chime in as well with any follow-up questions and just any interesting facts that she knows that our guests would like to know as well. So let's just start with the basic first question. You know, who started Firestone Walker Brewing Company 25 years ago? What started it all?
The short version is our family's been in the wine business for three generations, actually four generations now, and still in the wine business. But I was working there and had this habit for brewing. I enjoyed beers, was curious about it. There's a lot of parallels between winemaking and beer making. And I thought that at one point it would be fun to try something for sort of general consumption versus just a home brewing type operation. And so I wrote a business plan and I shopped it around and took it to a bunch of, you know, what I thought would be prospective investors and people who might be interested. And the plan went nowhere. I didn't get anyone interested and no one who was interested in investing. So I ended up talking my brother-in-law, David Walker, into it. And he came into the business from the computer world. He knew nothing about beer or winemaking or beverage at all. And he didn't have any money either. So we started off pretty modestly, just the two of us, as what we thought would be really sort of something a little bit north of a lemonade stand, but not very far. And that was so very humble beginning. And you know, we actually ended up hiring. Our first employee was a recent graduate of UC Davis, and he was, I think, $11 or $13 an hour. And that was a very modest beginning. And the second employee was a local high school student, another man who's pretty well known now, Mark Herthel, but he was then a senior at St. Inez High, and he just wanted work out for the summer lifting kegs. So that was our second employee. But it was, as you can tell, very homegrown and localized effort. And those were the modest beginnings. We started in a barrel building in the middle of a vineyard. It's in a very top secret place that we call Area 51 because I can say this now because it's a lot of years have passed, but we didn't have any permits. I'm not sure it was necessarily illegal to do what we were doing, but you know, there was no provision anywhere in the code that we could find that allowed a brewery, but we took the position there was no that actually banned it either. So we started brewing in the corner of a warehouse, and you know, we took the position that Steve Jobs had started a computer company in a garage in Cupertino. We knew he didn't have permits, so we did the same thing.
Seems fair.
So now I've revealed the general location of Area 51. The building still stands. The brewery left years and years ago. But anyway, that's how we started.
That's great.
I love that. It definitely, you know, you definitely started from some humble beginnings. So I love that introduction to the company. Do you have any follow-up questions to that, Kathy?
No, I think it's great. Adam's a great storyteller, and I've known their family for some time in the area. So it's just fun hearing some of these other little tidbits that I might not have heard before. So it's great.
You know, I can share that a lot of the gear that we used early on was old St. Inez Valley winemakers thrown away stuff. And by that, there's probably a half a dozen winemakers in the St. Inez Valley that had used our original brewing gear at some point and discarded it. Many of them didn't realize where it ended up, but we had a scrapyard. And so we actually hand-built most everything at the beginning. We were using wine tanks and an old dairy tank that came from the Jacobson Dairy out on Baseline. I don't know if they ever knew that, but it was really ropey. You know, the original brewery, we got pictures of it somewhere, but we couldn't close the doors to this little warehouse because we had hoses running through it. And so I think if the alcohol beverage people had ever showed up, our ability to secure the premises was about zero. But, you know, those are the early days. It's a little different now.
That's right.
And in case they're listening, we absolutely follow every rule to the letter of the law now, I promise.
Right. So. Right.
That's great.
You've built an amazing corporation. So,
well, let's go on to our next question here. What kind of brought Firestone Walker to Buellton specifically? Was it just because you're from the area, or what was the choice there? What made you choose the area, Buellton?
I guess it was about 1998. So a few years later, we were still brewing and we felt like we had a little bit of a following. We were only making one product, and we started with one account. It was the first account was the Hitching Post, right on 246 in the middle of town. And then we added Maddie's Tavern. And so we now had two accounts, and we were off to the races. So we had huge dreams and aspirations. I don't think our balance sheet really reflected the enthusiasm that we felt. But as we started to string some accounts together, we thought, you know, at some point we're going to have to figure out what we're doing. And so we persuaded Jim Buell to sell us a little piece of land there on Ramada, right on the north side of town. And there wasn't a whole lot going on there at the time. He had an arena that he was running. He used to do his fundraisers and other things there. And so we were actually the second, I guess there was one other building on the north side. We were the second building to go in. And originally we actually used it for wine storage, but we built our building there thinking one day we're going to move in and Buellton is going to be our home. And the beautiful thing about Buellton is it's true then, it's true now. You can get everyone the entire town could have a meeting in a large gymnasium. It's just such a wonderful place to do business, to get to know everyone. And the city management that was so receptive and eager. And I think in those days, kind of surprised at our enthusiasm and our excitement for this project, but they smiled and supported us. So we got our building built first. And then we basically rented it out to a bunch of different winemakers to store case goods to start with. But that was our aspiration. We were going to, at some point, we were going to move in there slowly. And we were collecting used beer making equipment. And so some of the locals who might remember visiting us in the early days, you could look through a window. We had all this stored, decrepit beer making gear that we bought at auctions all over the West Coast. And we set up a little tasting room. And that was our first ability to kind of introduce our beers beyond the few tap accounts that we had to the public. And it turned out to be a really opportune location. Buellton is certainly a stopover for a lot of travelers. People know it. In the old days, you know, Pea Soup Anderson's was a huge searchlight to bring folks in. And obviously their gas stations and all the service industries that are there help as well. But we found that a lot of people started to find us. They exit the freeway and wander in and say, oh, now I know where you're from and who you are and so on. And that really helped the storytelling part of it, which was so important to us. And then things sort of changed by opportune. We were going to brew there early days, and then all of a sudden a brewery had gone bankrupt up north, the old Slow Brewing Company in Paso Robles. And it's a long story how we fell into that, but we started, we sort of had no choice really because of the opportunity was so massive. And so we ended up shutting down our production out at Area 51 in the little legal warehouse and moving everything to Paso and trying to go legit was our goal back then. But that left Buellton for us, which was our kind of our emotional and our ceremonial home, if you will. And so we started to evolve Buellton, and eventually we had this massive barrel program because I came out of the winemaking business, so understood barrels, understood fermenting in barrels and what that meant. And those take a lot of space. And so Buellton became essentially the barrel works. We moved all of our beer making barrels there, which we keep to this day. And the building, the size, the location, everything was sort of perfectly suited to the operation. And that's made in many ways Buellton our spiritual home. And visitors who come and wander inside the barrel works will see those barrels sitting peacefully on the side of the Highway 101 and give us a chance to tell a story about what's in those barrels and what it tastes like.
Yeah, it is a destination. I mean, there's lines out the door. Sometimes we have new releases and whatnot. So we know it's been a huge asset to our community and locals, visitors. We all love it alike. And I know my family, it's one of our favorites. So you'll find us over there often. The kids like it. There's something for everybody on the menu. And I think it's just a great addition to our community for sure.
Originally, once we started serving our beers there, and it was really just a tasting room, and some of the customers said, well, we'd like to pair this with something. So, you know, I think we got some dried pretzels, and that lasted about 10 minutes. And then we got more pressure to provide something else. And we brought in the flatbread from up in Los Alamos, and we served those out of a toaster oven behind the bar. And those were well received, but it was clear that we were going to get forced into the restaurant business, though we were determined to stay in wine and beer. We ended up opening the restaurant in 2003. And I think it hit a real nerve. And, you know, one of our lessons learned, I mean, we didn't really figure it out for quite a while, but there were really two aspects to beer making that's important. Number one is that the brewery has to serve the local community. You really have to become both a meeting place and a local connection, the beers themselves. And this is true across the planet. You go to Germany, to Holland, to England, to all the great beer making communities, and you'll always find a small brewery in each community that serves its greater region. And that was a lesson that we've held very near and dear to us. But the second part of it is that you need to make something that is portable for the rest of the world. You need something that can kind of put you on the map, that can be your contribution to the greater beer making. And so there's kind of two competing challenges. One is to always maintain your local roots. And I think we've put a lot of energy into that. And certainly our beers like the 805 and some of our very approachable community centric, if you will, beers are all about that. But we also try to make beers that are portable, that they're going to last, they're going to be carried away and sort of treasured elsewhere. So the visitors who come to Buellton and might travel, you know, come from far afield and return home might be able to say, hey, look at this little treasure I found in Buellton. And we put a lot of energy into mining that treasure. So that's, I think, essentially what BarrelWorks has become for us. We make a whole selection of our sort of reserve and top-end beers that are collectible, that they're highly sort of age worthy, and you know, hopefully they'll be just a little star in the, you know, the overall beer constellation of worldwide. But anyway, it sounds really good as I talk it here through here, but it's a little more challenging in reality. But that's what we're trying to do.
So, sounds good.
Don't take this too seriously, but anyway.
Hey, you've got a great product, though. You guys have done just knocked it out with a lot of your product. And you know, and it's interesting because you know, when, like you say, we come from a wine area, right? This is kind of wine country where we are, but to introduce beer into this area was really something new for us, I think, in our community, and that craft beer has just taken on a whole life of its own. We see them popping up all over the Central Coast. I can imagine you probably know the numbers better than I do, Adam, of where, you know, where you started and how many craft breweries are, you know, were around then and now. It's amazing and how that industry has grown in the area.
All true. And it's, you know, fine beverage making, and it doesn't matter whether you're in the spirits, you're in wine, you're in beer, there's the artisanal beverage movement has just exploded. And certainly the wine industry throughout Central California and California at large, you know, did the same thing in the 1970s and 80s and so on. And likewise, beer sort of was trailed that maybe by 20 years, but it's done the same sort of thing. And what all of us in the industry have found is that, you know, customers are more interested. I mean, there was a day when, you know, the life was Gallo Hardy Burgundy in a large flagon, and that was about it, or, mm-hmm. or, you know, Blue Nun and some of these other Mateus, some of these other sort of jug wines. And now there's just a detonation of options and choices and styles and appellations and sub-appellations. And the same is true in beer. And the customers tend to be curious. They tend to be promiscuous. They want to try a lot of different things. They want to get to know, you know, what the inflections of each local offering are. And, you know, if you're going to be successful or you're going to really participate in this business, you got to be prepared to quench that thirst, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, so the BarrelWorks beer, a little bit more about that. I mean, I know it's different from your 805 and some of your other taps. So it's more of a sour wild ale.
So, yeah, so we do two different things there now. We've been experimenting for quite a while in sour beers. And the whole idea of open fermentations, where you're essentially allowing atmospheric yeasts to participate. And there's an analogy in winemaking where natural yeast fermented wines are the same. In the case of beers, they'll go through a series of slightly different fermentations using the wild yeasts. And they're known as sour beers, which is sort of off-putting in terms of a name, because it doesn't sound quite right. You know, you think of sour milk and so on.
Right.
And yet what's sort of interesting is the beers, once aged, and they are aged, they become extremely stable from a sort of chemistry standpoint. And the flavors end up expressing themselves in quite remarkable direction. So you can have citrus flavors that are expressed. You can have sort of soft fruit flavors that are expressed. You can even get sort of nutty out of the barrel and coffee flavors. I mean, it's a wide spectrum of flavor profiles that can issue. And so the sour beer program, you know, requires a lot of space. It requires time. It requires patience. If you come and have a fresh pint of 805, it may only be 8, 10 days old. I mean, that is, you know, that's bread right out of the oven, if you will. And the sour beers could be 18 months old. They could have been sitting in those barrels that you can see if you take a tour of the barrel works for quite some time. And a lot of those barrels that we use were formerly used for winemaking. And in fact, most of them did come from wineries local and afar. In addition, we're now hosting our sort of the other end of the spectrum are fermented beers, high gravity, higher alcohol beers, which are part of our reserve program, which are also stored in barrels, and those are stored in whiskey barrels. So we're co-locating those now. That program has also expanded. And so when you come down, you'll see some of our proprietary reserve series beers that are all available for tasting. And those tend to be very high alcohol compared to your average lager or something. And again, shelf stable, cellar worthy, collectible. You know, these aren't quaffing beers. These are sipping beers, but another whole dimension to try and experiment for a visitor who might not have encountered that before. So if your world has been, you know, light lager and, you know, American style beers for a long time, it might be a real eye opener to see what's out there.
Interesting. Is there a lot of that out there, Adam? Is there a big market out there for that, or something new you guys have tried?
It's more of a niche market, no question. I mean, you know, 90% of American beer as a category is just what you can imagine, you know, the Bud Miller Coors world. And then craft beer is, depending on the market where you're from, somewhere around 15% of the market nationwide. And then of that 15%, these higher gravity collectible beers is a really small amount.
Interesting.
But just like in winemaking, you know, some of the big wineries out there may make 90% of their volume in sort of daily, you know, readily available grocery store wines, but they usually have one or two wines that are their hallmark or their kind of their halo effect. And, you know, Mondavi family has been making Opus One. They don't make very much of it, but their Opus is a partnership with the Rothschilds as an example. And a lot of our local wineries do the same thing. They'll make one particular wine that is their most heralded and sought after, but the other wines often pay the bills. And
yeah,
we try to do the same thing.
Interesting. And so the barrel, because the barrel aged beers, they kind of take on the flavor of the barrel too, I would imagine, like either it's the whiskey or the wine or whatever. Do they take on some of that flavor?
Absolutely. They certainly do. So, I mean, the process of aging, which is in a sense just adding small amounts of oxygen over time to the beer, which allows it to put it in a sort of crude terms, the beer will rust eventually. Mm-hmm. And as it does evolve, just like wines that are kept in barrels and other beverages, spirits and so on, it will take on the flavors of the barrel. And so if the barrel was formerly a Four Roses whiskey barrel, for example, which is one of our barrel providers, and a fairly famous distiller out in, then it'll have aspects or notes of the whiskey in the beer as well. And then the two will play off each other. So it makes it a really interesting, sort of complex, multi-layered beverage.
And you'll serve that here at Barrel Works, will it be?
Or absolutely. And so you can go in even now and try those beers. That program continues to grow for us. So we're moving more and more barrels south, and we'll be really expanding it. So it's, again, Buellton is such a wonderful spot for it because we've got a good amount of space there and it's sort of set up that there's two different tasting bars. There's a small packaging line in the back that you can tour and see where we bottle the straight out of the barrels into, you know, they're tiny runs though. I mean, we'll produce more in a day up in Paso than we'll do for an entire year out of some of these small runs.
Right. I would imagine. That's really neat. It's fun to hear.
Yeah. I was so interested about this as well. I mean, I love how knowledgeable you are about it, Adam. I just had a question as you were, this kind of goes back to when you were talking about the different flavors and the process there. I wanted to know what your favorite is. Do you like that more citrus or fruity, or what's your favorite?
To be honest, I get this question a fair bit because you're in and, you know, you have customers storing across the aisle with a huge selection in front of them. And they, you know, and you'll always, the standard answer is, you know, I like the beer that I'm drinking best at the time. But, you know, which of your children do you like the most? Whichever one hasn't misbehaved or is best received. I don't. So I know this is kind of a cop out, but I do have a huge range. And what I think, just like in winemaking or in other spirits and other beverages, I think there's a beer for the occasion. In other words, it doesn't mean that you can't have red wine with fish, but it does mean that on a hot San Ynez Valley afternoon, like you know, we might get in the peak of summer, it's kind of refreshing to have a one of our pilsners, the Pivo Pils, or the Firestone Lager, or even the 805 is a, you know, is a good marry. But meanwhile, on a sort of rainy day when you're soaking wet and you pull in after the cold of December, it might be really, you know, a better choice to curl up with one of our anniversary beers. And, you know, it's that is served in a snifter glass usually because a lot of it's about aroma. And so I think what I would say to the listeners and to the visitors who come, you try to, as you taste through a whole selection of beers, you try to picture what occasion and what circumstance this might suit you best. And as you do that, I think the beers start jumping out in terms of opportunity. You go, oh my God, this would be great with a meal. This would be a very different option. Maybe I'm having wine to start, but then we transition to a course of beers for the middle of the meal and then return to something else. And yeah, it's just about making life a little, you know, we're not about drinking a lot. We're about drinking small amounts, but savoring it and linger over the meal longer. And if the beer helps you do that, then mission accomplished as far as we're concerned.
I love that. I like that it has to fit the mood and the occasion and that you're about, you know, enjoying that time together. I think that's a great vision to have. One question I kind of had is, since you're celebrating your 25th anniversary this year, we know that you've introduced the Brewmasters Collective. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So a little bit of a retroactive or retrospective move for us, I suppose. We did some sort of what we consider retro package. We went back to the original label of our double barrel ale, which was our first product that we launched with. In fact, it was our only project for the first few years. And it was, you know, it was 100% of our production back then. Now it's quite a bit smaller. I think generally the market is not as enamored with amber ales, which is what it is. So there isn't a, you know, huge outcry for that as opposed to IPAs and some other styles. But we took three of our beers, which was the DBA, the Pilsner, which is our Czech style lager, and the Union Jack, which is an IPA or India Pale Ale, stronger pale ale. And we put them together in a package sort of as a collective. And it celebrates, and we've done a number of things this last year, just celebrating our 25th anniversary, trying to reminisce and share back with some of the folks who might have traveled through the Central Coast years ago, or they attended Cal Poly or UCSB perhaps, and had family here for a graduation, driving through some episode in their lives. And it's remarkable how many people say, oh, I remember I drove through Buellton this day, we're coming back from graduation and we had a DBA to celebrate. And it's sort of fun and exciting to be, you know, a little piece of, you know, people's history. And as we all know in Buellton, it is to a large measure a destination for many folks. And I think all of us in the community like opening the town up and what we have to offer, not just beer, but wines and recreation and everything else to visitors. And I think part of that is, you know, trying to make it is receptive and welcoming and interesting for those guests. in our own way. I mean, I don't know, ostriches and DBA, there's a mix.
It's always been, you can see it all.
Yeah, it's always been a little eclectic, and I think we do well by that. I mean, to me, you know, I'm a native to the Central Coast, and we have a lot of esoteric and unique aspects here. You know, our climate is certainly that. I mean, go tour Hearst Castle if you want eclectic, you know, and it carries to the our friends in Solvang just down the street. So, you know, there's eclectic as well. I mean, this is not Orange County. It is an interesting, diverse, expressive, creative place to grow up and to raise a business. So,
and I think you're right too. We say we're a little bit quirky maybe, but we're eclectic. But you know what? We've got some great hidden gems. And I know when we go on the road and do trade shows and, you know, to share, people like Buellton, like, what, where is that? You know, is that in California? I was like, yeah, of course it is, you know? And so it's just kind of funny to see people's reactions when you start telling them things. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I know where you are. But you know, sometimes they don't always see what we have, or they've got to get down some different avenues and roads and streets to kind of venture into some of our hidden gems that we have here. So, but that's what makes it fun. And I think that's what's inviting, is we are, you know, open our doors and come on in. And I think I get that feeling too at your place, Adam, at the restaurant. And, you know, we go for family gatherings or functions or celebrations just because we can all go and find something we like, and it's enjoyable, it's relaxable, it's you know, casual, and it's very welcoming. So I think it's all good for Buellton.
I think any visitor, and I've had the opportunity to go on the road a fair bit, and, you know, selling the beers and before that our wines. And I've always told, you know, those interested or curious about, wait, you're not Napa. Wait, you're not here. You're not there. You're so many places you're not. And my message has always been, you got to be a bit of a treasure hunter. If you're looking for giant billboards and neon lights, you know, on the side of the road, well, you know, you go to Las Vegas and they'll tell you exactly what to do and where to go and how to do it. The beautiful thing about the Valley in general and Buellton in particular is, as you say, there's all these little secrets and treasures, and you can go suss them out. The internet makes it easier to find them, but you know, you go find our friends at Industrial Eats for lunch or something, right? And you go down and taste, you know, wines off Industrial Way. You can tuck down to where we are and so on. And, you know, if you're up for bike riding, we've got world-class biking here and great hiking all around us up in the Pacific Trail or back in the St. Inez Range and on and on and on. And it's never going to be a freeway of people on that trail and a crowded bike stand. It's going to be there's going to be a lot of room to stretch your legs, and then hopefully a lot of places to quench your palate.
That's right. That's right. It's what we love about it.
Yeah, there's something for everyone, and I love how you're just tying that in, Adam. It's just perfect. It's really a unique location. Thank you so much for joining us today, Adam. It has really been wonderful learning more about the Firestone Walker Brewing Company. I've definitely learned a lot. One thing we want to start asking our guests at the end, and you've already kind of highlighted on this a little bit, is besides, you know, Firestone Walker, what is your favorite thing about Buellton?
You know, there's no one, again, this is like, which is my favorite beer that you asked earlier.
It's a hard question.
One action. I diversity is an overused word. And what I love about Buellton and why our little corner of the world is so precious to us here is that it has an authenticity in its diversity. So go explore the nooks and crannies, reach across the counter and talk to whomever is there, and you're going to find someone who lives in the community, works in the community, raises their children in the community, and is making, doing something interesting. And you'll find that in every, from guys building hot rods off of Industrial Way to being their own butcher to a couple of bakers in town and on and on and on. It is a wonderfully authentic little treasure in the center of Central California.
Beautiful. I don't think we could end it better. That was perfect, Adam. Do you have anything else you want to add, Kathy, before we end today's episode?
I think I'm good. I'm so glad Adam got to join us today and that our audience got to hear from him, because it's just really, if you're traveling through Buellton, definitely make a stop at the Firestone Walker Brewery. You will not be disappointed.
Awesome. Well, we know that Firestone Walker Brewing Company is definitely a wonderful part and special part of Buellton. So thank you so much again, Adam, for joining us. We'll go ahead and leave the website and social media and everything in the notes below. So just go ahead and look there. If you want to follow them on social media, they'd sure appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Don't forget to leave us a rating or review, and we'll talk to you next time. This has been another episode of the Meet Us in Buellton podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Mackenzie Felstead and produced by Relic.